Hi, this is Winona LaDuke, or Bine Sikwe, Indigenica, Galababani Ka, Gishkaniganing, and Dunjaba. That's my reservation, is White Earth Reservation in northwestern Minnesota.
Could you explain the significance of Wild Rice to your community?
Yeah, our reservation has a lot of wild rice on it because our treaty of 1867 reserved that land because of the rice. And in our story, our migration story, we began on the East Coast, and we are instructed to move to the place where the food grows upon the water, which was wild rice. And so we moved 1,000 years ago or so out to this region, and today there are 19 Ojibwe reservations or Anishinaabe reservations in the United States, a portion of this, and about 100 in Canada, largely around the wild rice area. And it's our most sacred food. I don't know. I'm not really in charge of what's most sacred or how that sacred works, but it is a very sacred food to us, and it is a food that is for all our feasts and our ceremonies and for all our essential, and it's our food that's really sustained us through all these years.
And how have genetically engineered seeds affected the community?
Oh, yeah. So the wild rice has been, natural this time, but beginning about, I'd say the 1940s is when it really began. There was an intent by the University of Minnesota to come up with a way to domesticate wild rice and grow it in diked rice paddies and use chemicals and fertilizers and combines to harvest it and create uniform varieties that would all arrive at one time. And they took a number of years to develop it, but by the 60s they had figured it out, and 70s, and it really caused a lot of damage to the economy of our wild rice industry in Minnesota, because for us as Anishinaabe, we couldn't compete with a guy with a combine. And so we have been battling that for many years, that we don't think that they should be able to market it or represent it the same. In 86 we filed a lawsuit, Wabazi versus Anheuser-Busch, who had some wild rice that had two Indians in a canoe on the label of it, but it was grown in a California diked rice paddy and sold by Busch, the beer company. And we ended up with an agreement and a state law on labeling, that in Minnesota you have to label paddy-grown rice as paddy-grown rice. But the loophole is that 75% of all wild rice which is sold today in this country comes from California. And so you could drive 75% of the rice through that loophole. And so that's our, next piece of work that we intend to do. But what happened to us is around 2000, they mapped the DNA sequence of wild rice at the University of Minnesota, which had done that initial domesticating. And there's a lot of trust issues with the university because of that. And so our tribes asked them to basically cease and desist in their genetic work on wild rice, because what we did not want them to do was to genetically engineer wild rice. And so began this battle around 2000, 2003, well, I think 2002 is when we really found out about it. 2003, I became involved, I was asked to get involved in it. And in that work, or maybe 2002 we became involved, I'm sorry, I kind of forget my sequence of time. But we started to meet with the university and explain to them our concerns that genetically engineered crops were not containable, and that it would contaminate our rice if they were able to grow it in their test paddies. There's 20,000 acres of domesticated wild rice grown in the state of Minnesota, and about 60,000 acres, I'd say more, of native rice stands. And so that 20,000 acres flows into the same watershed and is quite often proximate right next to that lake rice. So there's no containment. There's no buffer. And they actually have found out that they can't contain these things anyway. So they began this discussion with us, went on, and they kept treating us really like second-class citizens. I have to say, I spent a lot of time in meetings at the U, and their argument was they had the right to intellectual freedom and academic freedom, and that we, in telling them not to genetically engineer rice, were infringing upon their freedom as an institution. And our position was that freedom required responsibility. In this case, the risk was too great. And so they would not stop with their work. They have not genetically engineered wild rice, but they would not stop and say that they would not. They continue to do their academic research with no relevance to Ojibways. And they continue to do their work on wild rice and for marketing paddy-grown rice and, you know, really in disrespect to our people and is our feeling. So we're forced to go into legislation. And we introduced our first bill in 2004 to oppose genetic engineering of wild rice. Have been at the legislature for 3 years, and each year we battled them. In each year, 2005 actually is the first year, because in 2007 was our final campaign. And each year, for 2 years in a row, I testified, and for 2 years in a row, the first opposition witness out of the gate was Monsanto, that didn't want us to say that this, if this was stopped in the state of Minnesota, that that would send a chilling message to the biotech industry. And we said, this is about lake rice. This isn't about your crops. You know, and in fact, one of our members of our legislature, Frank Moe, wrote Monsanto a letter and asked them to back out. You know, and said, this is, you have no business in this debate. Well, we built a lot of awareness in our communities over 3 years. We testified, and in 2007, in May of 2007, May 8th of 2007, a bill to protect wild rice was signed into law by the governor of Minnesota on May 8th after a three-year legislative campaign. And that bill does protect, it looks at a lot of issues around our wild rice, including the water quality issues, lakeshore development, and genetic contamination issues. And ensures that there's a study of all of those issues and potential threats, and requires an announcement. It does not ban genetic engineering, but it requires an announcement. I'm trying to figure out how to best say it. My assistant could say it better, but there won't be genetic engineering of wild rice in the state of Minnesota because they won't be able to introduce it without the tribes intervening. And they're required to have our consent, and the tribes will not consent.
Okay. And so, does that have to do with the autonomy of...
Yeah, the tribes have a... Yeah, they're required to be consensual in what would occur.
Okay. Has there been evidence that the traditional rice has been affected? I mean, can you...
There's no genetically engineered wild rice.
Okay.
We have no genetically engineered wild rice. That's why we launched this campaign, as we wanted to be ahead of it.
Right.
Because by the time they introduced it, it would affect us.
Okay.
Right. So we're good.
Right.
We're good. And I, you know, here's Andrea. I'm going to introduce Andrea. Andrea, she asked me about the specific nuance of the bill, and Andrea is actually who lobbied the bill this year. I didn't lobby at all. I told her about Monsanto. Can I just change with Andrea for a minute?
Sure.
Not to ditch the effort. I'm going to listen to Andrea, actually.
Okay.
But I have to remember it was May 8th, right?
Yes. That was signed in. The bill... We compromised, and Representative Frank Moe actually drafted a new, what was currently passed. Initially, we started out the campaign with a two-year moratorium this session. In the past, it was a 10-year moratorium. We compromised down to a four-year moratorium, down to a two-year moratorium, and then this was another compromise on our part with the state legislators. The legislation calls for any notification, statewide notification, to interested parties if there is an application for a permit to introduce genetically engineered test plots of wild rice in the state, nationwide. If anywhere, they would contact all the interested parties in Minnesota. Specifically included in that legislation is federally recognized tribes of Minnesota. Upon that, they would have to compile an environmental impact study. What would be the threats, potential threats of this release or this test plot in the state? And then they would also want a public response, and then response from interested parties. So it creates some roadblocks for any of this to take place in our state. Also included in this was a wild rice management plan, which... the day that the bill was signed, this study has to take place and be reported back to the Minnesota State Legislature in February 08. This study will have to include how wild rice natural stands can be increased in our state, because they are on the decrease because of development near lakes, lake development, shore development, pollution in our lakes. And so this study is going to incorporate that, as well as identify any potential or now threats to wild rice. And then with this study, it's supposed to further educate and help Minnesota legislation determine if there needs to be a stronger bill introduced in order to protect wild rice and how to proceed in the future to protect wild rice. So those are basically the specific and highlights of that bill.
So, and it had a lot of support.
Well, another part of our strategy this year was not to go through the ag committees of Minnesota. We decided to go through the natural resources committees, and that's where it picked up. I mean, that's where it is. We were not a crop by all means. Our wild rice is not a crop. We do not farm. We do not plant it. We do harvest it. It traditionally occurs on our lakes, on our reservations, and in various lakes around the state. So I think it being a natural resource was more in the realm of where it needed to be versus in the ag world. But because it is cultivated in Minnesota, they do consider it an ag crop in some areas. But for us, it was an issue, and we raised and educated, you know, the people and raised the awareness that it's not just, you know, it isn't an ag crop for us. It's a cultural, you know, importance. It's a medicine for our people. And that's what actually got a lot of support for some legislation and defined it as unique. It has a different, unique status. I mean, not only in the fact that it's a medicine for our people, but it's also protected by treaty. And then, you know, the state, if they don't want to acknowledge that, well, then on some level, the federal government is going to have to acknowledge that. But we would rather do it at the state level and keep it local. So.
And if I could ask both.
Oh, she just stepped out.
Okay. Or I'll ask you and could you talk about the connectedness that culture has to land?
The culture and the land. I mean, that's just, you know, just the reason why our people is in Minnesota is because of the migration story and the prophecy. The wild rice, you know, we were told there was going to be food on the lake that occurred, you know, food on the water. Just that in itself, that's wild rice, and we wouldn't be a people surviving today if it wasn't for, you know, our food on the water. You know, I wouldn't be here, you know, a descendant of my father, my great-grandfathers, and my grandmothers if it wasn't for wild rice. And so, I mean, that just is all-inclusive in our identity and who we are and our purpose of living.
Mm-hmm. And could you introduce yourself?
I'm Andrea Hanks. I'm from the White Earth Band of Ojibwe, and I'm also at the Diné Nation. I'm the Wild Rice Campaign Coordinator with the White Earth Land Recovery Project.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.